Welcome to the first WRHVAC podcast. I hope this will be the first of many, as I'm sure it will be. This first recording is with myself, Jamie Wilson. I'm founding director of WRHVAC, and my colleague Ben Hanvey. He's business development manager for WRHVAC. Welcome, Ben.
Hello, thank you.
And we've also got our guest today from a company that we've recently started to partner with, and we've got a number of projects in the pipeline over the next few weeks. So I'm delighted to welcome Kelvin Kelly, Training Director of Business Edge.
Hello there.
Hello, Kelvin. Thanks very much for agreeing to join us for our first podcast.
No problem at all.
Being the first podcast, I think we're both a bit sort of uncertain as each other, aren't we?
It will be a learning curve,
but we're enjoying it so far, and we've built ourselves a little sound recording den that we're in.
Yeah, so Business Edge, privately owned training company, one of probably two or three very well-known UK-based training companies. We sort of tend to deal with organisations and training requirements that the colleges can't deal with. So the college is obviously attuned to looking after the younger generation, the
yep.
school leavers, sort of 16 to 19, 21 year olds, I suppose, doing their NVQs or SVQs or
okay.
trailblazers, are the now the yep. later schemes. Whereas we tend to do shorter courses and maybe aimed at more established engineers or people wanting to reskill.
Okay.
But we do everything and anything to do with refrigeration and air conditioning, from electrics, ducted systems, ventilation, humidification, dehumidification, obviously F-gas, which is primarily the most popular training requirement.
Right, okay, fine. So your customers are typically going to be contractors, that air conditioning, refrigeration contractors and heat pump companies that put their engineers on training courses, is that right?
Yeah, in the main, but we also run courses for end users. So the supermarket chains, the likes of John Lewis, Coca-Cola, Metropolitan Police, the Bank of England, you name it.
What do the police need F-gas training for?
Well, it's not F-gas with the police, but they want to know, the Metropolitan Police, it was their computer systems and the filtration and the cooling of their server rooms and so on. Because of the security issue, some of it has to be done internally.
So it's easier for them to have their own engineers.
Yeah. Same with the Bank of England. You can't just wander in off the street like a normal fridge guy and do some work in their printing works. They get a bit tetchy.
Fine. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we're a recruitment business. Now we're partnering with you, and one of those projects is that you're going to actually train at us. Are there any other organisations that you train that aren't explicitly in the air conditioning refrigeration sector?
A few over the years, not so many that you couldn't say associated in one way or another.
Sure.
Mainly salespeople.
Right.
Okay. So they may not be technicians or engineers, they may never actually get their hands dirty working on the equipment, but need to understand what they're selling.
Okay.
So that could be some of the larger air conditioning manufacturers. If they bring a new salesperson in, they need to have a basic understanding. Or some of the product manufacturers, so chemical manufacturers, manufacturers of recovery units, tools and equipment. They need to be able to explain why a potential customer should buy their particular product, why it's better than an alternative. So they come along, learn more about the industry and what their equipment is going to be used in.
Got you. That makes a lot of sense, actually. We recruit a lot of salespeople for air conditioning manufacturers, refrigeration manufacturers, and heat pump companies. Training those people up to be able to sell the equipment is a good thing. Okay, now, on your website, I saw that you also provide tools and equipment. Can you tell us a bit about that part of your business?
That's relatively new. What happens quite often it's a bit like the, if you go and learn how to drive, a lot of people, the first thing they buy, the first vehicle they buy, was something they were taught on, because they're comfortable with it, they understand how it functions, they know where all the switches are. We have the same issue where people come on a training course, they start to use products, tools and equipment, and when they go out and start working, they'd like to have something they're familiar with. So they've often said, well, where can I buy that particular product from? So we teamed up with some of the main manufacturers, and they were very supportive. I said, right, okay, as you're an educational facility, we would support you with, you know, preferential discounts so you can get good pricing, because we don't sell volume, so sure. We're not like some of the major distributors who have branches all over the country, so we couldn't possibly compete with them. But they've supported us in other ways to help us be more competitive. So if anyone wants to come along and they do the course, particularly like a product that they've worked with, they can purchase it from us.
Okay, so here's a question that came up earlier. So Dexter Way in our team, he's going to be running a competition next month, I believe, where he wants to give away a tool, some sort of multi-tool that an engineer. Okay, what is the number one product, hand tool that that an engineer needs?
For a refrigeration engineer?
For a refrigeration engineer, and that'll be the product that we give away in July.
The thing they tend to really like now are these new Bluetooth temperature probes and pressure gauges. Traditionally, an engineer would turn up with a manifold set, which is a block with gauges on, hoses, so they can connect to a system and see what's happening. Mm. We've moved on a little bit, and you can now get Bluetooth transducers, Bluetooth temperature clamps, and they all link to an app on your phone or tablet, and technicians love those. We'd all love gadgets anyway.
So that's the one, is
it? So that's the one. They're relatively cheap these days.
That's good.
Yeah, obviously, if you're going to give it away.
Yes.
<That's> so we can probably help you out with that.
Superb. Okay, so now you've been in the industry, so 20 years with Business Edge and 20 years before that. You must have seen a lot of changes. How has the refrigeration and air conditioning sector changed in your view over your career?
The main changes will be to do with the fluids,
right?
For environmental reasons. The technology itself, the refrigeration system, the vapor compression cycle, has been tweaked over that 40-year period, but it basically is the same product. We've made things more energy efficient, like a lot of mechanical devices. There's ways of improving on the old designs. But most of those improvements, again, were to help reduce the amount of refrigerant used. So that's been the focus. And when I started out, the refrigerants we used to use were the environmentally damaging, ozone-depleting CFCs that most people will have heard of. Even if you're not involved in refrigeration, we've all picked up a can of deodorant and it says on there, contains no CFCs, because they were allegedly killing the planet. So they've gone. They were replaced with HCFCs, hydrochlorofluorocarbons, which were not ozone depleting, but unfortunately are very bad global warming gases. So now, global warming being flavor of the month, they're now being targeted. So we're now looking to get rid of those, and we need alternatives. So over the last 40 years, we've seen waves of refrigerants come and go.
It's good if they need to keep on being retrained.
It's perfect for us, absolutely.
Because it's great for business, all these reg changes.
Absolutely.
And the planet.
As a byproduct. The planet's looking much better for it.
Good.
And so is our bank balance. But the refrigerants tend to bring other challenges with them. So the technicians, you are correct, as new refrigerants come out, the technicians do require retraining, because there's subtle differences, but now we're finding larger differences, more problems associated with the refrigerants we're now going to be using. So they either operate at much higher pressures than your typical refrigeration engineer would be expected to work with, or they're flammable or toxic, or all four, all three.
And there's, I know there's a lot of companies trying to tackle these, all these issues. A lot of the manufacturers are, are trying to tackle these issues, having chilled water systems, but have the refrigerant outside the building and things like that. So, but what about companies and the people in the sector over the last 20 years or so? Have you noticed any changes there, any sort of challenges or anything?
Some of the old traditional contracting companies have gone.
Of course.
There's been it's been quite tough out there with regard to the actual environment that they're working in. You know, the margins are getting tighter and tighter, mainly because their customers are finding it difficult. So everybody's trying to cut their cloth to suit, and some have not managed to do so. Some haven't been able to adapt as rapidly as required, and they've gone. So what we're seeing in the main with regard to the skills of the technicians, the old traditional refrigeration engineer, a bit like myself, are getting a bit old. So when I started, you used to be able to go to college and do a proper fridge apprenticeship, where you go to college but you'd be working with a fridge company with a engineer, technician, and they would support you and train you. There was a period of time where that route disappeared, and that's left quite a large hole. So what we're finding now is a lot of the technicians coming into the industry are doing so from another route, from an alternative route, such as being electrical engineers or heating engineers. And they're seeing refrigeration, air conditioning, heat pumps as a natural progression or an add-on to their skill set.
So there's effectively the same engineers, but they're more widely skilled. Is there multi-skilled engineers now?
There's a lot more building services companies out there
yeah.
than there were when I began. And to a degree, some of it is preferable that way. I mean, I remember when I was actually working for a living, actually on the tools, if we turned up for certain work, as you mentioned, there are indirect systems where you're using chilled water, we'd have to turn up to site with a refrigeration engineer, a heating engineer, an electrical engineer, and a mechanical engineer, because the world was different then. The unions would say we need somebody to switch it off, somebody else to turn it back on again. Used to be difficult.
It's a lot of people to go and
do one simple job.
Sure.
Whereas now we're allowing multi-skilling. The fact is, though, it's not really that easy to achieve, because we all like what we like. We all seem to focus on what we're good on, and that then allows certain skills to develop quite quicker than others. So even though we have a multi-skilled workforce, they tend to still select a technician based upon what they know they are best.
Specialism.
Yeah, sure. Multi-skilled, but with specialist core.
Makes sense.
So first sort of top tip for anyone thinking of getting into the refrigeration air conditioning sector is get as many tickets as you can.
I mean, or don't, you know, if you are coming in from a different environment or background, don't think that just because you don't have any refrigeration experience that this is necessarily going to be a barrier. Because if you've got associated skills, there will be tasks and activities that you will be able to work on whilst you're learning the other elements, the more fridge-based elements, shall we say.
Sure, okay. What else do you think companies can do or should be doing with regards to training?
I think one of the issues that we see, it's a bit of a sweeping statement, but the companies that employ technicians are always telling us there's a shortage or a lack of skilled technicians that they can tap into and use to do this work. However, when we say, well, if you need to upskill your personnel, you know, these are the options available to you, when it comes down to it, they're not that keen to invest.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean,
we get a variety of answers to that question. Quite a common one is almost a fear that if they invest too well in their workforce, they'll see this as a meal ticket to somewhere else, somewhere better. Whether or not the grass is greener is another matter, but there is this reluctance.
But that's got to be holding companies back and holding the industry back.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And
it's quite a short sighted. It is very protectionist, very short-sighted view.
But surely those companies will lose staff for that same reason as that they fear.
Exactly. Yeah.
If they do invest.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy when you think of it.
Indeed.
A happy workforce.
I was about to say, the wider issue there is addressing, you know, if you did skill them up, why would they then leave?
Yeah,
surely they'd be happy,
sure.
And you've invested in them, so they've now invested back in you.
I would have thought it goes round like that.
Yeah.
If it's the underinvestment, it's the lack of loyalty, employee loyalty is going to be...
Frustration.
It's going to be, you know, whatever you put in, you get back, right?
Yeah.
What else can companies or should companies be doing apart from not worrying about making their engineers too good and just going for it and being the best that they can be? What else do you think is holding companies back?
Well, I think, again, some of it is a reluctance to buy into the new technologies. And I can understand their reluctance. There's a lot of changes happening, and a lot of people are stepping back, sitting back, saying, okay, well, I'm not going to be an early adopter.
Sure.
I'm going to see how things pan out.
So what sort of technology are we talking about? Heat pumps, or are we talking about refrigerants as themselves?
Both. Yeah, I mean, both of those examples are very good ones. With regard to heat pumps, we started working on heat pumps, training-wise, 30 years ago.
Yeah, they're not new, are they?
They're not new, no. This is a very old technology.
Sure.
It never had a chance of really taking off because of the monopoly that the traditional heating systems have. People always like to go the route that they're familiar with. So when you have central heating systems that we all have running on gas-fired boilers, be it in a commercial or domestic application, we all understand that. We know what we're getting with that product. So when it eventually fails and needs replacing, we tend to replace like for like, even to the point of brand loyalty. You know, so I had this particular model before. I need the same one again because it gave me 20 years good service, etc. So that's sort of been one factor that has caused heat pumps to stutter a little. The other issues has been not really the fault of heat pumps, more the fault of sort of various incentive schemes that have been for other industries or other technologies that seem to not been as successful as we would have hoped.
So the renewable heat incentive,
yeah.
I mean, that had a big impact on our business. A few years ago when the RHI was put in, a lot of our business came from solar companies and heat pump companies. We built a number of national sales teams for some of the heat pump companies in the UK. And overnight, when they turned the tap off of the incentive, we lost a lot of business because of that. So I'm absolutely understand what you're talking about, this sort of stop start mentality. It wasn't gradual.
No.
And that has been a big problem, but I absolutely love heat pumps and solar and things like that. I'm absolutely passionate about renewables. It's a bigger part of our business today than it was 2 years ago, which
right.
is great. Not as good as not as big as it was, but it is coming back, and it's something that we're all really passionate about. I actually bought a heat pump the other day.
Excellent.
Which I was really excited about doing. I've always wanted to get involved, but my 150-year-old house doesn't really lend itself very well, so I'm told, to air source heat pumps. But my kids' paddling pool, well, swimming pool, shall we say, it's quite a big above-ground pool, is perfect for the heat pump, and it's working
Absolutely.
Really well.
Good.
And it's actually quite a cheap unit. I paid about £700-800. It's not a brand that anyone would get too excited about, but it's for 6 weeks of the year, and I'm very pleased with it. And my pool's 28-30 degrees every day. I'm getting 5 kilowatts for every 1 kilowatt of power. And it's working really well. So anyway, that's enough about.
I wonder if, aside from all of the implications of efficiency and stuff going, like with the technologies like the heat pumps and the solar and stuff like that coming back around and now being considered again, because it's not the first time, like you say, is it because the technology's come on and it's got better?
A little. The improvements have been minor in comparison with the duration, you know, the lag in time, because they were always good. They're always very efficient. They are more efficient now, and the refrigerants we're choosing refrigerants which are better suited to the application than previously. However, it is a good thing that they are coming back. They will come back more and more. Mm. We were promised that, you know, heat pumps were the future, and I'm sure they will be.
Yeah.
But it's a lot longer in in gestational duration, whatever it is, than we'd have assumed.
It's really interesting.
It will. I think the change with building regulations, if they continue. This 2024, I believe it is, when they're banning the use of gas boilers in new builds.
That's quite a big regulation.
Yeah.
And a lot of people saying that will never happen, it will never actually come in. What do you think? Do you think that reg will come in?
I would hope it comes in. I've heard it several times, and it keeps getting deferred.
Right.
Now, it depends on the political situation at that time.
Maybe it'll be on someone's manifesto this week of the Tory party.
It might be, yeah. But that doesn't mean anything is going to happen.
No, it certainly doesn't mean that it will come to fruition.
No,
I'd almost say if it's on the manifesto, it probably won't happen.
No. Excellent.
But I think the public conscience is very much from a global warming point of view, and I think that's the main draw at the moment, because this equipment, apart from my cheap Chinese piece of kit, it's not cheap.
No.
And it's not mainstream.
No.
Although there is plenty of that kit about, and it's Scandinavians have been using
it for
decades and decades.
It's the length of time that you're talking about, people being familiar with the kit as well. Like a domestic boiler goes to someone's house for 20 years, and now they've got to replace it. Oh, no, we're going to replace that with heat. Well, hang on a minute, I want a boiler. You know, it's not going to be an option soon, so we kind of have to buck the trend. And it's really,
I think it will happen. I mean, there are, as you say, the environmental issues are very much to the fore.
Mm.
You know, the whole thing with the phasing out or reduction of the use of plastics, you know, I thought that was something and nothing. But it seems to have really taken hold, and the, you know, even down to the supermarket carrier bag situation, you know,
which is a great thing.
It is,
really.
Yeah. And the reductions, you're talking billions of bags have gone. You know,
but in the UK, really, to get this plastics issue on the table, it took David Attenborough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, who is the refrigeration air conditioning industry's David Attenborough? I mean, the only one I can think of at the moment is Richard Branson, who's put forward $1 million prize, for the most efficient air conditioning unit to be developed. So that's a positive step, isn't it?
Yeah.
To drive change and technology. Okay, so back on to training. You know, you are an expert trainer in the refrigeration air conditioning sector. Where is training going?
At the moment, people will require training on them? Well, I would say they are looking at what they need to have rather than what they want to have. There's a lot of uncertainty in the industry. It's not a particularly large growth time for the refrigeration air conditioning industry. It's doing all right.
I mean, there's more kit out there than ever, surely.
Yeah, there is. There's more choice, there's more variation. But there is this uncertainty of where we're going with the whole political situation. So building works, reinvestment in technology and so on, there's a lot of people sitting back to wait and see. So what a lot of our clients are doing are just putting their personnel through what's required. So F-gas is by far the most popular course that we do. But there's now not so much a requirement, but as a need for the technicians to understand some of the alternative fluids, the new refrigerants. So the CO2, ammonia, hydrofluoroolefins, low GWP HFCs, all of which have slight problems with regard to safety.
And you provide training on all these
we
as well?
We provide training on all of those.
Great.
As a training company, we've been, unlike some of our customers, very much an early adopter. Mm. And we've had heat pumps, ground source, air source, water, various other heat pumps installed in our premises in Portsmouth for 15 years. We changed all of our systems, the technicians are trained on, over to the low GWP refrigerants 4 or 5 years ago. So whenever something changes, we jump in, because what we think is we should be showing people the latest and greatest, not old technology. It may mean that when they're out there in the field, it takes 10 years for something to crop up, for them to actually see it, but at least they're trained on it and they have an awareness of it. The big issue at the moment is flammability. A lot of the new refrigerants are flammable. Therefore, the way you work with them, you have to not make wholesale changes, but there are specific actions and activities that have to change, have to alter, to make sure you do it safely. Otherwise, you only have to go on various internet, web browsers or whatever, and type in fridge explosions, and you'll see a whole plethora of them.
Have you ever had an engineer come to you for training because there's been
a problem?
A problem that something spectacular.
A few things. We always know when an accident's happened within the industry because there's a sudden upsurge in demand. We're very good at firefighting rather than being reactive rather than proactive. Mm. And that happens a lot with our electrical training. So we do various electrical courses, and we've had spikes of interest in that area quite frequently from various sources. And then when we look down and find out more detail of why that all of a sudden this is important to our customers, it's because an accident's happened. Somebody's been electrocuted. Luckily, it's always been fairly minor. Somebody's got a shock where they shouldn't have done, we need to address this. So part of their accident investigation has shown a skills shortage. So that's fine. But we have had, there's one that always crops up or springs to mind, shall we say, where it was actually an old customer of ours. So we've known this particular company for a long time, and they had one of their technicians working on a heat pump, an air source heat pump, and they were pressure testing it with as they should do, with an inert gas, and it exploded.
Wow.
Luckily, the technician involved wasn't hurt, but he was somewhat shaken up by this. And I actually know this individual, and he rang me immediately after the incident because he was unsure of what he'd done wrong. He thought he must have made a mistake because it was quite a dramatic explosion. So he taught me through the process. Everything he did was correct. He carried out all of the functions properly, tested it correctly. The process was as it should be. He was just unfortunate that being a heat pump, this particular part of the system had been sitting in a cold, damp environment and corroded.
Right.
But you couldn't see this corrosion from the outside. When he was testing it, he did it incrementally, as he's been trained to do. Got it, I think this system's test pressure was around about 24 bar.
Okay.
So 24 times atmospheric pressure. He got it up to about 18 when it failed. And bits of pipework flew across the building's area where he was working. The side panel of this particular heat pump sort of peeled itself open like a banana skin. Luckily, he was some distance away, so none of this affected him personally, not physically at least. Mentally, it did, but not physically. So that then, even though he was reassured by the fact that he had done it correctly, he wanted then retraining, or his technicians to be retrained and made aware, or reaware, if even there,
yeah.
That is a word,
I don't know.
of the potential in the sort of work they do. Because like everybody, we get very blasé about
sure.
these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a near miss like that to waken you up sometimes.
Well, the problem is, there's nothing that it sounds like he can do in future to mitigate this issue. So
yeah.
Is every time you pressurise the system, ticking time bomb, as it were.
Yeah, but it potentially is. But the only mitigation there is that increased awareness.
Sure.
So that what he said and what he's now implemented within his company is that what will happen is that they have the hoses that they're using to connect from the air inert gas cylinder to the actual system are going to be longer,
sure.
So the technician could be physically further away, but they're braided and have a means of tethering. So if something bursts or something breaks, it's not going to whip
gotcha.
Around, potentially hurting the technician. And it is this physical distance.
Sure.
You know, making, whereas previously, the technician may have been 2 or 3 feet away from the equipment. They're now putting a barrier up.
That makes a lot of sense. So they're not going to be wearing the bomb disposal outfit just yet.
No. Somewhat difficult to actually do the work you need to do.
But safe.
But safe, yeah, it would be safe.
Nowhere near as scary.
No. But the other thing, of course, is making sure members of the public are out of the way when you're doing this as well.
It was the first thing I thought when you talked about that accident was shrapnel.
Yeah,
there would have been so many bits and bobs flying around there. So it's interesting. I suppose the only mitigation you could make would be to really thoroughly investigate how long that unit had been sitting there, how old it is, how what testing has been done, when was it last commissioned, if that's even a thing, with the air pumps. And I guess you'd look back and see what was and wasn't done.
Sure.
Yeah. Interesting.
So just moving on now. We're a recruitment business and we work within the refrigeration and air conditioning sector, have done for over a decade now. So one of the things that we are passionate about and we want to champion and do champion is bringing people into the industry, which as a recruiter to make money out of is a very difficult thing. But we still want to do it because we think it's good for the sector that we're in. So there's a couple of areas that we see and champion, and that's young people.
Yep.
We obviously can't make any money out of young people and experience the apprentices, but we do various things to champion that and help things along the way, because those people in the future would become engineers, salespeople, and they will be in our network, which is great. It also helps our customers, and ultimately we're here to support our customers, so we're happy to do that. One area that we've always tried to monetize and make work for us and our customers is the ex-military.
Yep.
Now, I know from speaking to you previously, Kelvin, you train a lot of military that are leaving the forces. They're often engineers in their own right, mechanical, electrical engineers, and then they get trained in refrigeration air conditioning. We as a recruitment agency surprisingly find these people really hard to place.
Right.
Where I would see those as the ideal candidate. They're well trained, they've got great discipline, they've got a great work ethic, mm-hmm. they've shown great loyalty, teamwork.
Yep.
You really know what you're going to get. Why do you think we as a recruitment company struggle to help ex-military personnel transition from a military role into an air conditioning engineer role, for example? Why is that?
I think the main reason is almost the answer to one of your previous questions of what the company should be doing, you know, where we said they're reluctant to buy into new technologies, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other things they seem reluctant to do is invest in people on a longer term. So what we're getting from feedback from the service leaver is when they send their CV through or when they telephone a company and say, look, I know you're looking for people, this is my background, etc. What they want is somebody who's a trained, experienced engineer who can just jump in a van, go. Now, that's fine, but that's a very small pool to be able to recruit from. You're realistically having to take that person from another company.
And the best people are looked after?
Correct.
And all have a job.
Best people are looked after, they're good, so yeah. They're looked after.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, not always, of course, but sometimes the people that are on the move, are available, are often the journeymen,
yeah.
The people that always move on, that you're not going to get that regular service from, if you like, over 5-10 years. They're going to be here today and move on for 500 quid, £1,000 pay rise.
Yeah, or a better van, or better holiday, or healthcare, whatever the little perk is that attracts them at that time. No, I agree. The thing is, if they took that little gamble, and in a lot of cases it's not really a gamble.
Oh, that's what I think. I don't think it's a gamble at all. I think they would be a great employee, and I want to do everything that we can to get more military people into our clients.
Well, one of the benefits or one of the little perks that a lot of these technicians have when they're coming out is that the forces will pay for them to do work placements.
Right.
So the actual employer wouldn't have to pay for them to actually go to and work with them.
You know, so do you know how long that's for?
It varies, to be honest. The Army, the Navy and the RAF do things slightly differently.
So they will pay the engineer's wages, perhaps while they're buddying up and getting those first few weeks, because it's probably only a few weeks, but that's great.
I've heard
of experience.
A month, 6 weeks, 2 months sometimes, because it depends on the rank as well.
But it's also a try before you hire.
Yeah, for both.
For both.
For both parties, because you know, the company involved gets to see what this person can actually bring to the table, what skills they do have. But also, you know, you have to remember that in a lot of cases, the military personnel have been involved in their role for 20 years, maybe. They're still quite young, because they may have joined when they're 16. But it's a big challenge for them to go out into civilian street, you know, to actually divorce themselves from the military. So it's a good, and that's why the military do it, because to allow them that little comfort blanket, you know, you're not going out in the big wide world just yet, but we've got you, and you can go there and see what you think of this particular company or this particular role or job.
Without it feeling too far removed from where they were. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I think they offer ongoing training support. There's a bit of a training budget post.
Absolutely. I mean, the people we tend to get, or the majority of them, are 6 months to a year before they're leaving.
Yes.
They have a budget. They have a pot of money that they can spend on whatever. And they're given very good advice on, you know, how to spend it. In the past, there would be people that decided they were going to spend their little pot on being a diving instructor. So they go to the Bahamas to do this, you know. And they would get paid to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. That was in the good old days.
And what we're saying is, don't do that. No. Become a refrigeration engineer.
Absolutely. You could still go to the Bahamas. Air conditioning's very big over there. But yeah, exactly. So the MOD have got a bit wise to this. You know, it's not a pot for your holiday. It's vocational.
Indeed.
The idea is to get you employment at the end. So they get this amount of money. They invest in the training. And most of the people that come through our door, certainly, they're very serious about what they want to do. They've spent a lot of time researching what opportunities are available to them. And they've, out of all of the different industries they may want to go into, have selected by the time they get to us, they want to be a fridge engineer or an air conditioning engineer. That may be because in the past, in their previous role, that's what they did. A lot of the Navy engineers have to look after the refrigeration plant. A lot of the avionics engineers have to look after refrigeration air conditioning equipment. Or it could be their family members that have worked in that industry. For whatever reason, it's their choice. That's what they want to do. What occurs then, they come along, get the training, but you're absolutely right. That's not the end of it. The MOD will give them funds for, I think it's up to 5 years after they've left, depending on how much they spend before and depending on their rank. You know, the higher up you've got in the MOD, the better your perks. And that can be used via an organisation called LCAS. And as long as the training meets their criteria, the LCAS pot of money can be used for those courses. The main stipulation is that it has to be of a level 3. So it has to show progression. Mm-hmm. It's no good you being a trained, experienced technician and then wanting to do something very basic.
You know, so this is an NVQ level?
Doesn't have to be NVQ.
Right,
no.
Okay.
All qualifications have, all regulated qualifications are put into bands.
Right.
In exactly the same way as an NVQ is, or your O-level, A-level type qualification. In fact, a level 3 qualification is the sort of equivalent of an A-level.
Okay.
But it can be a short, you know, it could be a 1 day course. Yeah. It depends on the complexity involved. For example, you know, F-gas is a level, or can be, depending on which certificating body you choose, can be a level 3 qualification, because it is very complex. Some of the electrical courses, like if they want to do 18th edition wiring regulation qualifications, that's a level 3 qualification. So if they've got the core skills, but when they're actually employed out there doing the work, they find they're doing more electrical work than they did previously, or more fridge-related work than they did previously, they can tap into this fund and get the, you know, the training paid for.
Upskill.
An upskill, yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Again, that's another positive thing for their employer, because their employer doesn't have to pay for it. They pay in another way, because that technician has to be off the tools for that period of time, be it a week or 3 days or whatever the duration. So they're not earning money for the company at that time. But there is no other additional cost that's being paid for by their educational fund.
So I think there's our second top tip then, is don't dismiss ex-military because they don't have the experience.
No.
They're very well qualified. They will be great assets to your business. You should look to hire them as much as possible.
Absolutely.
So moving on to young people in the industry, mm-hmm. We talked about colleges and institutions like that get involved in training young people. I know one or two of our clients have excellent academies, companies like ICS Cool Energy in Southampton. They've got a wonderful training academy and in-house training director. Mm-hmm. But Ben, you've been looking into engineers, and I guess why people should join the HVAC sector as engineers. What have you found out from our own data? You know, what can an engineer expect to earn as a ballpark sort of salary before overtime?
That's a really intricate question. So basically, one thing that that we'll say is that when you look at people who aren't yet at the F-gas stage, where they haven't actually got that qualification, where they're maybe going through commissioning and that sort of things and getting to grips with things, the jump in the bracket between a fully fledged engineer with the tickets versus somebody who's coming up, you know, it's easy to see how one or two can get you onto several different pathways with multiple doorways that you can take and opportunities that you'll be able to take advantage of. But it's finding the ones, I guess, with the will to either invest in themselves or the ones that are working within a business that will invest in them. So, the biggest issue for us as recruiters, in my opinion, is that lack of people out there. It's not that they're not out there, they are, they're just a ticket away.
Sure.
It's about opening them up to people like yourself and making them aware of the stuff that's out there and the regulatory changes that are coming in so that they're aware of where the industry is going so they can get ahead of the curve and they can be an early adopter.
Yep.
Because for the sake of £500 to £1,000, whether you're making it as an individual, your company's making it, you're talking, think about contracts that you're now going to fulfill.
So an engineer, a qualified engineer, what do they earn? So 25K at the real bottom end? And then 40K or so at the top end?
Between 35 and 45 is the most common I see.
And then over time, a vehicle, workwear on top. So
generally speaking, it's all in there, yeah.
You can earn a very decent living within the sector.
And we said, you know, if the main reluctance is, oh, well, I wouldn't hire, for example, an ex-military person because they don't have that experience. Well, they've just got their F-gas ticket and whatever else they might need. Well, actually, they've got probably 20 years, like you said, Kelvin, of mechanical engineering experience. So you're only talking about working on a system or a selection of systems. They're not going to be completely unfamiliar with it. And actually, you know, I'd be firmly in the corner of the military.
They don't take long to learn.
You would hope not, wouldn't you?
I would very much hire for attitude, skills these days. Skills and attitude, experience when we're hiring in our business comes way down the list. Skills and attitude make a business. That's what's really important.
Well, we don't often hear, because it's like a lot of these things, you hear bad news, not good news. Mm-hmm. So we don't often hear feedback about how well people are doing once they leave us and actually get employment. But on the odd occasion when that has happened, and we're talking to, you know, senior directors for large companies who have taken that jump, you know, actually they may see it as a chance, you know, of employing an ex-military. They've always been very positive in their feedback. It's always been, you know, yeah, brilliant, I'll take as many as you've got. Because once you've tried, and once you've, you know, all right, yes, there's always going to be the odd one who doesn't quite meet the required standards, because nothing is guaranteed. But 99% of the time, that's not the case. 99% of the time, they are what people are looking for. And we actually did a survey through our Career Transition Partnership, who work on behalf of the MOD. It was because we were going for an award. Right? We were doing a training initiative of the year award, and it was based upon our military training. Mm. So we asked for data back on the previous 5 years, because we've been doing this for 20 years. In fact, I've been doing it for longer than that, because the previous company we did it for as well. And they gave us data for a five-year period that out of that number of people that have been trained, qualified, 98% of them were still employed in the refrigeration air conditioning industry.
Oh, that's a stat, isn't it?
Wow.
That's not bad.
That's very good.
That's retention.
Yeah.
that really champions our point, doesn't it? Companies are really missing out on this valuable,
absolutely,
skilled workforce. Okay, so just to sum up then, essentially what you're saying is, if you're an engineer in the industry or an engineer person looking to become an engineer in the air conditioning refrigeration industry, get as many tickets as you can. Engineers these days are multi-skilled, and from what Ben's saying, the more tickets you have, the more experience you also have, the more money you will command as a salary, and that's why we go to work.
Yep.
companies, if you're experiencing hiring issues, no doubt you are, firstly, come and speak to WR HVAC, of course.
That's the reason.
But secondly, really do look long and hard at military people, ex-military people. They're very well qualified and could be a real asset to your business. If you're an air conditioning refrigeration engineer and you'd like to get your hands on a temperature probe, I will put that forward as the competition prize in July. Look out for that. There'll be plenty of things on LinkedIn and other platforms as well. Thanks very much, Kelvin, for coming in. It's been a great chat. Thank you, Ben. And thanks very much to our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed the insights from this podcast. If you've got any comments or want to get involved in future podcasts, then please get in touch with me, jamie@whiterecruitment.com. You can get in touch with me via my office and via LinkedIn. Our next podcast is going to be out in 3 weeks' time, so look out for that. Thanks again for listening.